Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
I told you that I want to go to that festival in Sweden.
Oh, you said it would be cool to go.
Yeah, and then I got the opportunity and I decided
Look,
to do it.
I don't mind you going. I just wish you would have told me. That's all.
Dude, she needs a therapist. You've been wanting out of this stupid relationship for like a year now. That's not her again. Seriously?
Babe, what's happening? Danny.
Christian says you've got this special week planned.
It's sort of a crazy festival. Special ceremonies and dressing up.
That sounds fun.
Unbelievable.
Welcome and happy midsummer. Skål!
What's happening?
I don't know why you invited us.
That's why you look so guilty right now, because you know.
We only do this every 90 years.
I was most excited for you to come.
Hello and welcome back to Fan Critical, where once again we are having a break from our scheduled podcasting to bring you a commissioned podcast. Yes, and you have the duo of Gareth and Len here. Len being me, Gareth being the one about to say hello.
The deadly duo.
Deadly duo.
That's what they call us. Or that's what we call us. But others can call us that if they want.
Yeah, so set the scene. We've both got our mushroom-infused tea because we are going to lose our minds talking about this film. The film... chosen by one of our lovely Patreons, one of our lovely, lovely Patreons, someone who supports us every month and has the ability to commission a podcast every month, Chris Meyer.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
What a choice as well.
When this was made as a choice, I was ecstatic because we missed the opportunity to talk about Midsommar, Ari Aster's second horror film.
Yeah.
Which came out in 2019. We had several discussions where it was our intention to actually do a podcast on this film. Unfortunately, due to staggered release times, like Gareth being in Australia, at the time I was in the UK, the film actually came out like 3 months apart from each other, I think, in those territories.
It was so frustrating.
It was very frustrating.
So frustrating not to be able to see it for so long.
Yeah.
But yes.
So we couldn't actually ever really... feel like we could release a podcast that was relevant because we couldn't talk about it at the same time. So this is a perfect excuse to do it. And thank you very much, Chris. And just to say, if you are listening to these commissioned podcasts and you would love to hear us talk about something that we usually wouldn't talk about, then you can go to patreon.com/fancritical. And on there, you'll see several tiers, and one of which is if you kindly give us some money every single month, precious monies that we use and put towards equipment and hosting costs, and I need a haircut. Then basically, you can commission a podcast once a month, and it's a great thing for us because it basically takes the decision making out of our hands, which is quite nice because sometimes, like now, to be honest with you, during COVID and the pandemic, we have obviously come up with some new formats that are being received very well. So thank you guys for liking those. But when the industry has taken such a hit that films aren't being released anymore, it's very difficult to cover anything, basically. So you guys coming to us with suggestions is great. So that's patreon.com/fancritical. If you check it out, any support would be greatly appreciated. As I said, all the funds go towards the podcast and producing more content for you guys. So, Gareth, Midsommar. Yes. We're going to blueberry it first, which is our rating system, 0 to 5. Can be no halves, very harsh but fair scale.
Yeah.
This film follows on from Ari Aster's first horror hit, which was Hereditary. Came out in 2017, I believe.
2018. I watched it with you, didn't
yeah.
I?
Yeah. It's this guy has an ability to take the genre, the horror genre, and he's taken it to a place that I haven't personally been to before with the genre. I'm a massive horror fan. I love horror films. What was your opinion on Midsommar? And could you please blueberry it? Blueby.
Well, yeah, Ari Aster's movies are sort of, I think, yeah, they're almost changing the horror genre and making it really, really difficult for me to pick other horror movies to watch because nothing is quite capturing my imagination like his movies.
No.
I loved Hereditary, but you know, we won't talk about that today. And so I was hotly anticipating this one.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, so frustrating for it to not come out. I remember you came out for a visit. This is before you moved here.
Yeah.
You came out for a visit and you said, oh yeah, Midsommar.
Let's go see this.
Let's go see it. And I was like, dude, it's not out. It's not here yet. It's coming out in 3 months.
Frustrating.
Very frustrating. So the anticipation rose even further. And you know, sometimes when you watch a movie after you have anticipated it for such a long time, it's only ever going to disappoint.
Yeah.
Right? This didn't, though. This was everything I hoped it would be. I ended up watching it alone in a dark room.
Always the best way. Me too. I watched it the first time alone in a dark room.
Mm-hmm. Creepy.
Terrifying.
And some of the... I mean, it's just one of those movies where the atmosphere is just perfect. It
transports you. If you like that kind of thing.
Yes.
I can say that this film is not for everyone.
No.
And I will say there will be spoilers for Midsommar from now on. So if you haven't seen it and you're interested by the things we're saying right now, go watch it and come back and listen to this. yeah, continue.
I love films that have like pagan rituals in them.
Mm.
You know, I'm thinking...
Culty.
Yeah, cultiness is brilliant.
Terrifying. If it's done properly and not tropey, it's very good.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm thinking original Wicker Man, for example.
Blair Witch, first Blair Witch film.
Blair Witch Project, oh my God, unreal. I love them. I love those symbols
folk
and
horror,
those, yeah.
Which is a very niche genre, but Ari Aster's taken like the Wicker Man style and, you know.
Reinvented it. True Detective season 1,
100% actually,
very much
gothic
so.
Folky
gothic
horror. Yep.
So southern gothic True Detective. So yeah, look, the atmosphere of this is perfect for that. You're right, not for everybody, but for me and what I wanted this film to be. It's quite a beautiful film as well. Cinematography, like in its
costume design.
Yeah, costume design, the architecture. I love that. It's weird and mind-bending in places, and it is also just as a piece of film. It's another kind of genre-bending film as well. Like, it's not pure horror. This is a strange movie to try and classify.
You would say that there's not anything that's going to make you. There's no jump scares in this film. This film preys upon
very few. There are one or two little ones.
Preys upon a lack of understanding in the human brain, or something that you haven't seen before that jars you so much and scares you within. That is what it does, and it lingers for long periods of time. It's a long film, 2.5 hours or so, and it lets you discover these weird, very weird and disgusting things at times. With the main character played by Florence Pugh, Danny, who is fantastic in this film.
Unbelievable. She is unbelievable.
She is unbelievable.
But it's one of those descent into madness type movies as well. And she does it so well because she goes from just this, obviously heartbroken character for reasons that I'm sure we'll touch upon in a moment. But and just the way that she sort of is slowly being enveloped into this
world,
into this culture, it's incredible. Long story short, it's a five blueberry film.
Okay, good.
100%.
I was like, when are we going to love this?
This is my film of last year.
Yeah, I would say this is in my top three films of last year.
What else is in there?
Joker. Really enjoyed Joker. Fair. I enjoyed 1917 a lot.
Also fair.
And Parasite, obviously.
Oh, God, yeah.
So it's been a great year. I mean, those are my films. But Midsommar, for me, is a five blueberry film. I'll get to the point straight away. I think I've chimed in with a few thoughts with when what you were saying, Gareth. But essentially, if you were to describe this film the way Ari Aster describes this film, it's a breakup movie.
Hmm.
Now, if you were to say that and then, you know, see some of the things in this film, you'd be like, what is he talking about? But he deals with these themes of family and hereditary and like breakups and relationships here in this film.
Mm. And family.
And family. Well. And he centers it around and he puts it in this bizarre place that you've never seen it before and deals with it in such an interesting capacity. The main character, Danny, like, oh my God, I can't speak enough for how brilliantly she's portrayed by Florence Pugh, but also just her journey in this film and how sympathetic you feel towards her, even though this horrific stuff is going on around her. The mood that is created is the key here. And some people do not like this sort of film. There are moments in this film where I guarantee you, I would say 50% of people watching it would be like, that's too much. Or because there are a couple of moments in this film, we'll talk about them very specifically, where, you know, even I, someone who watches a lot of horror movies and sees a lot of gore and stuff like that, was really disturbed, I have to say, watching it. And look, I think it's a great scene or whatever, but it's disturbing. But the mood created and the sense of dread that is there, you know it's going to be bad. How are they going to do it? And the visual nature of it is something that I've never seen before. I've been to a Midsommar festival, right? Where it's day constantly. Mm. And it's bizarre. If you're not used to that sort of... not seeing nighttime, you're not used to that, it's bizarre. Like, you literally just lose all sense of perspective, and perspective is what this film shifts completely. And visually, when you have no nighttime and you're just seeing all these things take place in this beautiful Swedish fields and mountain ranges with flowers and beautiful colors and lovely costumes, it's bizarre.
Well, it's very disorienting, the lack of nighttime, like that is, people talk about that all the time when they go on sort of Arctic expeditions and stuff.
Well, there's the nights that go on forever and there's the days that go on forever.
Correct. But you know, if you're there in the summer and it's just that daytime, it's almost like that almost represents the cult themselves. You know, it's like this sort of seemingly pleasant thing, like people would be like, oh, brilliant, yeah, constant sunshine. Not me, I actually like the rain, as you know.
Yeah,
but lots of people would love the sound of that, and that sort of, I think, represents the villagers themselves, who are all, like, on the surface they're these lovely, friendly, beautiful people, when in reality we know there's a dark side to them.
Well, there's either a dark side or it's just their actual religion and what they believe in. So it's one of those things where
I think from our perspective we can say it's kind of dark.
So let's get into the plot, and obviously spoilers here. So we start off with Danny, who, and the opening of this film, and Ari Aster does something very similar in Hereditary in the first 20 minutes or so. But the opening of this film is just disturbing as anything. We pick up with Danny. She's a psychology student. She clearly is suffering from a degree of mental illness in terms of depression. We see clearly that she's taking some pills, and she's in a frenzy because she's been trying to get hold of her sister, and her sister definitely suffers from some form of depression or anxiety disorder. And there's been instances before where her sister has threatened to end her life or something like that. But the last message that Danny received from her sister is very final, and she can't get any response from her on social media, on the phone. She can't even get hold of her parents where her sister lives. And you see her frenzied here.
Well, I think, doesn't her sister's message say, mum and dad are coming with
Mum and dad are coming with me. And
that's terrifying.
Terrifying. And the way the scene builds with the acting from Florence Pugh, the calls to her mate, and then the call to her boyfriend Christian, is excellent. And basically we see straight away that Christian's not really into this relationship anymore. He finds Danny too much work, it would seem, just from this one conversation we glean this.
Yeah.
And he says, look, don't worry, she always does this to you. It's not fair for her to do this to you. And then we see through a slow build up that what has actually happened is her sister has, and this is, I mean, cinematically very creepy, but masterfully done by Ari Aster. She has turned the car on, put a pipe out of the hose or the exhaust of the car, gassed her parents and duct taped the doors so they die in their sleep, whilst duct taping a tube with the gas to her mouth.
Yeah.
And we see this image of her next to the computer with the message written to Danny as the camera slowly pushes in on her, and there's vomit all over her and her eyes are purple, and it is viscerally disgusting and traumatic. And the noises that come out of Florence Pugh's mouth are animalistic and just so raw that it's unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, that image is horrific and sticks with you for a while. But it's a tough open, and like you say, great example of Florence Pugh's acting. Just quickly on her acting, I even think on the poster for the film, It's like, it's almost like a brilliant acting performance in that still, that image of her sort of crying and just looking so terrified is unreal.
Her face, her upset, sad face is very, I don't know how to describe this, just, she's so emotive. Yeah. She's so expressive.
Yeah.
And there is a scene in Hereditary with Toni Collette where I find there is an exact mirroring of this scene, something about Ari Aster and strong, vulnerable female characters and extreme loss. He's very good at getting amazing performances out of them. Mm. So we already start off with this fact that she's lost her whole family. She suffers from depression. She's lost her whole family. The only semblance of anything she has left is her relationship with her boyfriend, Christian.
Who isn't into her,
but you get the impression throughout this film, like, she wants so badly for this relationship to work.
Mm.
That she is in denial in a way about the way it's going. Yeah. Her friends are telling her this guy's an asshole. But anyway, he's going to Sweden
He was also going to split up with her.
He was basically going to split up with her until this event happened.
Until this happened. And he's like, God, I can't break up with her now.
He's going to go to Sweden with his anthropology, I think, classmates. Yeah. Because one of them is Swedish. His name's Pella. And he's offered to take them to a Midsommar festival. And he nonchalantly says, oh, yeah, I told you I was going to Sweden. And she's like, no, you didn't. You never mentioned that you were going to Sweden. He's like, yeah, I told you weeks ago I was going to Sweden. And then because she's so vulnerable at the moment, this is just reinforcing how much of an asshole this guy is. He's gaslighting her completely. She's like, oh, I'm really sorry. I must have been so caught up in everything that I didn't realize you were going to Sweden. It's like, oh, it's okay, babe. It's okay, babe. You can come with me if you want to, but it's probably not your thing, but you can come with me if you want to. And she does actually decide to go with them, which, you know, at this point, you're just like, just break up with this guy, just get this over with.
This is so shit for everybody involved. Like, nobody wants this situation.
No.
Like, you've got, Christian doesn't want to be there.
Doesn't want her there. He wants to have a lad's holiday to Sweden or whatever.
His mates are like, are you kidding? You're going to bring her along? This was supposed to be like a boy's trip to Sweden.
Well, Pella's excited about it.
Pella's the only one who's like,
because he has motivations.
Interesting. But even for her, like, this isn't a good idea. Mm. He doesn't like her. His friends don't like her.
Yeah, which is weird. I find his friends' attitudes toward her very weird in this film.
Mm.
And I don't like it. I think it's one of the missteps that the director actually makes. I think he should have made some of them a bit more sympathetic towards her. They're very cold towards her in a way that if she's just lost her whole family. Like, she's not hard work, Florence Pugh's character, Danny. She's she's vulnerable. Like, she's just a bit, not needy, but she's obviously needing something. She's just lost her whole family.
She is entirely reliant on Christian.
At the moment at the moment. Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, they are absolute dicks. But I think you, Will Poulter's character, Mark, he's
my least favourite character in the film. He's the stereotypical slimeball student who just wants to go to Sweden, fuck everyone, and which is terrible.
He's the one who sort of actively encourages Christian to break up with her.
Yeah,
come and
because he's a lad. He's a lad,
exactly, just absolutely lad.
I've met Will Poulter. So did you?
Yeah, lovely guy.
We met him at a little food stall. He was a lovely guy.
He's a lovely guy. He's not like Mark at all. That's why he's a good actor.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah. Weird, that, wasn't it?
Yeah, that is weird.
Hey, you're the actor out of Son of Rambo. Yeah, I'm Will. Oh, nice to meet you, mate.
We love Son of Rambo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So anyway, look, it's one of those situations where she is reliant on him, even though he is the worst possible person for her, because he hasn't got the balls to say, we're done.
Mm. And they end up going to Sweden. She goes along. So you've got the four classmates, one of them Swedish, who's taking them to his community, Pella, Christian, Will Poulter's character, Mark, I believe that is, and Josh, I think that is the guy who's actually going to like study, actually do some studying.
Yeah, yeah.
And they set off on this journey and they get there to this open expanse of greenery and lusciousness and people in, you know, bright sunlight, white costumes, and they automatically see this idea of nature and the drinking of nature. I'll say, I don't think this film's supernatural at all, but I think what it does is it uses nature and in the way that is actually realistic, like hallucinogens, like mushrooms and stuff like
that.
It's a trip. It's a way to merge with nature and see things in a different perspective, which is what we're talking about with this constant daylight and the drugs. They have some mushroom tea, and the journey around this Herga, which is the community, the Herga, begins, and it's a festival that they do every 90 years or something, apparently. So they're very privileged and honored to be there, and it's just automatically unsettling because you've got these weird sort of Swedish folk a cappella songs from the community that's going on, this weird droney music going on, constant daylight, and just unease has been put upon you because of the way we're seeing the world is also through this sort of psychedelic viewpoint because of the drugs used in this film.
You've also got, on top of that, you've got all these like murals.
Tapestries.
All the tapestries and all these like artworks that actually sort of basically depict everything that's going to happen in the film.
But they signpost everything, but they're not obvious.
Yeah.
There's one that's obvious, and the rest of them are, even in the barn that they stay in, are all over the walls and everything. And they basically, I was reading an interesting article about this film, and it's like, this film does such an amazing job of world building with doing no world building whatsoever. Like, this Herga, this community is obviously, like Gareth said, quite paganistic in its rituals and stuff like that. And we're going to talk about some of them in a minute. But the way that it doesn't actually tell you, oh, what are their gods?
Yeah.
What do these runic symbols mean? They never say any of that. Mm-hmm. They just like, this is the community. They're all fully into what they're doing. They're not really telling these foreigners that they've allowed to come into their community what's going on. No. They're just going to do it. And they are privy to it. I mean, obviously, they know that they are going to die, essentially. Mm. They're going to kill them. So whatever is going to happen is going to happen.
So they don't care what
they don't
they
care
find out.
What they find out or anything. It's that idea that they're trapped. Mm. They don't know they're trapped, but they're trapped. You know, rats in a maze, essentially. So the community have this festival every 90 years, and over several days, several things happen. And as I said, they're consuming lots of mushroom tea. They're eating the food they provide them. So God knows what's in that. And you get this idea, like Gareth said, from the tapestries. There's several different motivations. Yeah, McDonald's. There's several different motivations going on. Imagine that. That'd be good, though.
All right, we've got pizzas in.
Yeah, I couldn't be bothered to cook the pew pie tonight. So we've got the pizzas coming in. And what I mean by that is there's one of the tapestries that Gareth was talking about is very explicit at the start, which is essentially the seduction of a man by a woman in this community, which is to, this sounds bizarre, but basically the woman will make a pie with her pubic hair in there to seduce a man. She will also provide him with a drink with some of her menstrual blood as well. And this is something that they do that they believe in their community will increase the chance of attraction and also pregnancy. And the way this community grows is essentially interbreeding with themselves very selectively and with new blood that they bring in from the outside world. Obviously this gets spread throughout the film. You find this out. Once again, though, still not much world building. You sort of had to pick the pieces together here on your own.
It's
not explicit. They never have a conversation going, oh yes, the new blood has arrived.
Put the pubic hair pie in the oven.
Never said. Just in fact, most of the time, there's no dialogue in this film, and that's what makes it so powerful. But this ritual, these ritual days have begun. Everyone thinks they're going to have a great time. You've got the British couple there as well, who've been brought in by another Swede. So it's like this idea that they bring these people in.
Yeah.
You know, it's their job to go out into the world and bring these people in. The first day of the festival, they actually witness probably the most harrowing scene in the film, a ritual called the Atastupa, which I've done some research. Apparently that isn't actually a ritual in like any Swedish thing. But in folklore, there is something in Swedish history that says what happens in this ritual has happened.
Have you ever read any Swedish folklore?
Well, some of it is terrifying.
It's terrifying. It is absolutely terrifying.
Some of it can be like, very scary.
You know, they've got a lot of sort of dark, cold forests. And scary things happen in them.
Scary things.
But I can honestly recommend it. Read some stuff. They have like these terrifying.
Don't read it before
monsters.
Bed or anything or that.
Read it if you want
read
to
it
be scared.
In daylight, like it is the Midsummer Festival.
See, I don't recommend that either. Mm. That's probably
sunset.
More terrifying.
Sunset.
Yeah. No, sunrise.
Twilight.
I don't know when the best time to do it is, but
just
it's scary.
Anything. So this ritual, the Atastupa, is essentially the suicide by the elderly members of the community. They believe that once you reach a certain age, I think it's like 70.
I think it's 72.
72, very specific. Mm. That what should happen is you throw yourself off a cliff and you kill yourself. And the idea in the folklore behind this was that they relieve the burden of themselves on their family because they find themselves to be a burden past that age.
Surely, I mean, 72 is not that old.
No, but in the old times, that was old.
Yeah, I know.
Life expectancy has gone up.
Update your
They're
policies,
living in the past,
honestly.
Man.
Just have a quick look. And
they ain't got Wi-Fi.
See 72 thing?
Yeah.
Should we knock that up? Let's make it 82.
So all of the community gathers at this, the foot of a cliff, and as do our characters and Danny, who we are essentially watching these events through her eyes.
Yeah. Well, the thing here as well is as this scene's happening, like your prediction is, like you're watching this, this old couple who have been sort of treated as king and queen through the day.
Yeah.
You're watching them kind of go up the top of this cliff and you're like, sure, like they're going to just jump off and kill themselves, aren't they?
Yeah.
Like that's
your
prediction.
And then they do do it.
And then they just fucking do it.
Yeah.
Like it's...
Yeah. They do it, but the thing that's so shocking about this is you feel like you are dirty watching this. Mm-hmm. Like you feel like you are seeing something that you should not be seeing. Yeah. This community hails this ceremony as something sacred, and this is one of the most important religious things that they do as this community. You get a sense of that. It's an honor for these people to kill themselves. But what we see is we see the woman jump off first and very viscerally smash her face. She lands face first into a rock and you see everything. So when I talk about disturbing scenes, this moment for me sent the worst shivers down my spine I've had for watching film ever. It is horrible.
Mm.
I can take that. I mean, some people can't, you know, I actually enjoy films that make me feel something I haven't felt before.
Yeah.
This film did that for me. And Florence Pugh's reaction is just horrendous as well. She visualizes her parents dead and her sister dead at this point. A quick flash because the trauma and grief this woman has gone through, and then to be brought here and see this.
I mean, that seeing that would obviously induce trauma anyway, like just piling more trauma on top of trauma. It's so visceral. It's horrendous.
I've not seen anything that's made me feel this ill. Or realistic, you know, I imagine this is what it would look like, which is horrendous. Then the old man also jumps off, but he mistimes his jump, and he's still alive. He does not stick the landing, Gareth.
No.
So to kill him, they walk over with a large mallet.
Before that, though, because he lands... It's a big jump.
He lands like perpendicular or something.
Yeah, so he breaks his leg.
Yeah,
horrendously, and visually again, and he's in a lot of pain. And you know, as much as he was being pretty stoic about the whole thing and accepting that this is what has to happen, he's in a lot of pain here, and that pain comes out in his screams of pain, which then
the whole community starts screaming. And it's actually shared throughout the film of that idea of they share the anguish and the pain of each other. Yeah. And there's a couple of moments, which we'll talk about later, which actually the same thing happens. And it's very cathartic for them to make this noise and feel the pain that the person is feeling.
Yeah.
But it's not felt for too long because they walk over with, honestly, the world's largest mallet and just smack him in the head. And once again, you see this. And you hear the noise and the thud that it makes still sends shivers down my spine right now as I talk about it. And this is the moment when I was watching this film and, you know, some of the tourists there, the British guys, go mental. Like, what the fuck are you doing? What the fuck are you doing? Mm-hmm. Florence Pugh is just like crying.
Yeah.
Christian and Josh are like so excited about what they've seen. So cultural, as they call it, not really understanding what's going on. It's such a mind fuck, this scene, that for the rest of the film, I was just really quite ill. And I think that's what the film wants you to feel. It wants you to feel this unease. Because I said, once again, there's not really many jump scares.
Yeah.
But the things in there are so scary.
Yeah. Well, and then, like you say, you're watching it through Florence Pugh's eyes. And that's the moment that everything is sort of turned on its head. And this whole sort of like, oh, this is a bit weird, this is a bit creepy, turns into this is totally fucked up. And
yeah, something they're not used to.
Yeah, and that there's just disorientation from that point onwards, I reckon.
Yeah. Essentially, at this point, you know it's not going to end well for anyone. The British couple essentially get separated and you hear this scream in the distance and you're like, what was that? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, they're dead. You know, you just know they're getting picked off one by one at this point. It happens throughout the film. The idea is seduction, that, you know, Will Poulter's character. Mark is, as we said, the sleazeball. He gets lured off and then disappears for a long section of the film till we re-see him in a minute. Josh is obsessed with the sort of book and the scripture of this community because he's trying to write a thesis on this purger. And he breaks the rules by trying to take pictures of the scripture. And,
I feel a little bit sorry for him.
Like, he's generally there trying to learn.
He's trying to do some
But he is breaking
work.
The rules. He's not allowed to take pictures of scripture, Gareth.
Stop doing that, yeah.
He goes to take pictures of scripture, and then you think Will Poulter's behind him, Mark's character. Turns out it's a guy wearing his skin that kills him.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, skin wearing happens in this film. Once again, very unsettling. And eventually you get left in this situation where the only two people who we sympathise with in the... Pella is obviously brought them here for very bad reasons. So we don't like him. The only two people we sympathise with are Danny and Christian. And they're the only two characters that are sort of left. Okay. For actually quite a large portion of this film. They're, you know, I'd say 45, 50 minutes. They're the only two characters. They don't really know where the others are. They're a bit bemused, drugged up. And there is a couple of other things that happen during this festival. So there is the Maypole dancing competition. Every festival, they have a May Queen And the May Queen is the person who can dance around this pole the longest whilst off their face on mushroom tea once again. Or dandelion tea, I'm not sure which one it is.
I reckon if I was to take part in this, I'd fancy my chances. I've got good stamina.
Well, mate, I mean, I'll insert the audio of that dance now, but it's
it goes on for a long time.
And basically, Danny at this point is emotionally all over the place because Christian is being very distant from her on this trip, seduced by a community member of the Herger via or some potentially supernatural means, we don't want to say. Also, he forgot her birthday.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy is a prick. Oh my God. He forgot her birthday.
He thinks that they've only been together 3.5 years when it's over 4 years.
He's very neglectful of her, and he always turns situations around to make her feel like she is in the wrong.
I have to say, this film kind of, I found it enlightening from that perspective. Yeah. Like, I was like, what the fuck? How is he manipulating these situations? And then I totally understand the people that say that they've got a manipulative partner.
Yeah.
Or that they had one. I get it so much now. Like,
and that's the thing. It's the film is her discovering, her releasing this from herself. Like, she is clinging on to this relationship and Christian, when really, you know, this film is about a cathartic release of that relationship in the most extreme way possible. But anyway, she does the Maypole dancing competition and essentially wins.
Yeah, she nails it.
And this is the first time, I think, in the character that we see Danny, that we see her happy. Which sounds weird, because if you think about it this way, she's lost her family. She's in this abusive or emotionally abusive relationship. And this is a moment where she feels part of something. Like, I think during this sequence, she even speaks Swedish, which she doesn't know any of, to one of the characters. They're like, oh my God, we're speaking Swedish. How do I know Swedish? Because she suddenly feels like she's part of something. She's part of a community. And this is maybe a moment of realization that she could be part of this community. It's an interesting moment anyway. And she even sees her mum in the crowd at one point. She's like, mum, dad, you're here. Like, she feels like they're here with her, or sort of thing. It's interesting. She wins. She's the May Queen, and she gets given this what is very iconic image now, I think, in this film, is her in this massive sort of flowery hat and dress thing.
Yeah.
It is mental. I mean, visually, it is stunning to look at. And cinematography-wise, wow, what an image.
Yeah, it's a great image.
She wins the May Queen, Gareth.
Yeah, no, well done to her.
Good dancing.
I don't know if she had previous Maypole experience, but I'm guessing that she hasn't.
We have no knowledge, and, but I doubt it.
I doubt it. And she's taking out people who no doubt have had years practicing of practice. For years.
They literally dream about being the May Queen. She rocks up day one.
The locals have got to be absolutely devastated.
Fuming, if anything.
They've lost this.
What have they been doing all this time? Mental. Unbelievable. They haven't got like Wi-Fi or anything.
Years of wasted Maypole practice.
Building barns and stuff. That's what they've been doing.
Painting them yellow.
Wearing people's skin. Lovely stuff. Just jumping off cliffs.
Things to do on a rainy day.
Yeah. So she's the May Queen, and she gets led on this ceremonious pomp, and she goes around and everyone loves her. And, oh, yay, Danny, you're the best.
She has to eat some fish or something.
Eat some fish. You know, everything's a bit psychedelic. The world around her is literally breathing in and out, like contracting and expanding. That sense of the world around her being alive, her reconnecting with nature, reconnecting with something. Christian is also drugged out of his mind because he's been given more drugged menstrual tea. And when Danny is led off on this ceremonious duties that she must do, Christian is led to a sex barn by the community. And he is essentially sexually abused, I think, forced to have sex with... Not forced, like he's not held down and say, oh, have sex. He's like... Coerced drugs and these supernatural potential elements to have sex with the redhead who had been courting him this whole time.
It's a hard one, isn't it? Like,
it's a hard one.
He's He's put in a difficult position.
Where does he have a choice?
Does he have a choice?
Yes, this is the question. We don't know in the film. It's left very much open to interpretation. Like, are these things they're doing to him supernatural? Or is he just a dickhead? And we know he's a dickhead, but is he that much of a dickhead? This scene is very cultist, stereotypically, I think, where there is literally loads of naked people around them watching them have sex. It would put you off, yeah. I mean, it's unsettling. There's literally a moment where one of the naked onlookers goes up and starts like going, go on, mate, give it a bit more welly, and like push him on the ass and say, like, give it a bit more.
Yeah, well, stop doing that and maybe I will.
But it's an interesting concept because it's this idea that this is all about community, and it's obviously something that Danny's character doesn't have at the start of this film, which is community, or any feeling of connection to anything other than Christian. And this community do everything together. So they feel the anguish when that guy is dying by making those noises together. Yeah. But they also get pregnant together in terms of if one of them gets pregnant, it's a community thing. They're all watching. They're all complicit in this act. It's the idea of community is everything to them.
Yeah.
And they are not individuals. They are the sum of something, you know. And that is what this scene is all about. It's a positive spin on it, on something like this. But that is the way they perceive it.
Yeah.
And you're trying to come to grips with that. Danny gets, I would say, pushed towards seeing this.
Yeah.
They're like, oh no, don't go in that place where all the weird noises are coming from.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, I want to go in there. I'm all drugged up, man. That's not what she says. In fact, I would say this is probably the last line of dialogue she has for the rest of the film. And this is 25 minutes before the end. And she says, what the fuck's going on in there? Or something like that. Or I need to see what's going on there.
Yeah, I think I need to see.
Yeah, I need to see. I think that might be the last line she says. She wanders into the barn. She sees Christian having sex with this woman. It sends her into a spiral. And she goes into the barn where they're staying and she cries. And this cry is, like, once again, animalistic. The noises that Florence Pugh creates here are just something you can't really... I just couldn't fathom. Like, I could never make this sort of noise. I think Toni Collette did something similar in Hereditary, which I've already mentioned, and it's that parental... I don't want to spoil Hereditary, so I'm not going to mention what it is, but it's something to do with parental. It's just the noise she makes. I can't get over it. And Florence Pugh does something very similar here.
But this time,
yeah,
she doesn't do it alone.
No, because what do they do, Gareth?
They mimic her.
And they cry with her.
Mm.
And
it's hard to compute that properly. It almost feels like they're just taking the piss. Do you know what I mean?
It does feel like they're taking the piss, but for them, like, I've seen this film 4 or 5 times now, and every time I take something different away from it, and I never will have that feeling that I had the first time that I watched the film. And I found it very disturbing, had an altered perspective on it, because I felt very altered when I watched it. I felt very out of my comfort zone. And then when I've watched it more analytically, I see how clever this film is. And it shows you these moments where they do the breathing together, they do the anguish together throughout the film. And then here at the end, they're sharing her grief. And it's once again, giving her something. You're not alone. You know, you've been alone in your grief for all this time. Christian's given you fuck all. Mm. We will share this grief for you.
Yeah.
And give you a sense of community that you just don't have, a sense of family. And that's the thing that I find so well done about this film. It does reward multiple watches, for sure.
Mm.
So we cut to Christian finishing up.
Finished.
And then he's like, what the fuck has happened here? He is so disorientated. Yeah. He scrambles out of the barn.
Yeah, he just runs out. And
this is where the film has reached this sort of dazed, confused horror that is just there. Mm-hmm. And you've built to this climax, pardon the pun. Mm-hmm. And he literally, and just, you are at a state of frenzy. You're like, what the fuck? This is, they're screaming because she's, you know, crying about Christian. He's running out of the barn naked. He stumbles into another barn where he sees the British guy skinned and with flowers poking out of his eyes. You see an arm through the flower bed where the sacred tree is growing. You see, like, just these images and you're like, what the fuck is going on? And then he's drugged. He's just drugged and he falls asleep. He wakes up. And he's paralyzed, and they're at this final day of the ceremony, and Florence Pugh is sitting up there. Danny is sitting up there in this even bigger flower dress and flower crown. She is immovable. All you can see is her face.
Yeah.
No hair, just covered in flowers. And it is very weird. She is mute. She is like, she is so full of rage and... I don't know, just her performance without saying a word here, just her face, which is very is unbelievable. And
the flower dress is too much, though.
It's too much. It's too much. I mean, it looks cool, but you're not moving around in it, are you? It's hilarious.
Unless she's got like some wheels underneath it or something, like that's mental.
But the thing here is that one of the elders explains that, okay, our festival's coming to a close and we've had a great one, everyone. Thanks for turning out.
Cheers.
Been a great time. Now, as you all know, we sacrifice four of our own and we also sacrifice like five foreigners that we bring into the community to appease our gods or whatever. And the decision to kill one more foreigner or one of our own, chosen at random, will fall to the May Queen. Now, the only foreigner left is Christian, who is sat there in a wheelchair, paralysed. It's actually very horrific. I hate the idea of this not being able to do anything or say anything or move, obviously. And Danny's in the same state. She's also paralysed. Paralysed with rage. Paralysed with...
flowers.
Flowers.
Paralysed by
paralysed by the florists.
Yeah.
And Danny gets to make the decision of whether to kill Christian or kill someone else from the community. Basically, she has the choice to save Christian, someone that she loved and wanted to come to Sweden with and believed was helping her, but also, you know, deep down knew he was a dickhead. And then we just cut to, so she left to make a decision. We cut to what is the end sequence of the film, which is Christian being, and if you're listening to this and you haven't seen the film, this already sounds all weird, but this sounds even weirder. Christian being fitted into the skin of a bear. And carted off. He's still paralyzed. He's a giant teddy bear at this point, but a real bear.
An
actual bear, like a grizzly bear. They've killed the bear, skinned it, put the skin of the bear on him, and all you can see is his face in this bear head.
It's all bloody around the edges.
It's just fucking terrifying. Then he's being carted off to this sacred other barn filled with hay. And then, you know, he's not alone because he's luckily filled with the... And these images are horrific and they make you feel a bit sick even thinking about it. But basically everyone that has been killed that we knew in the film have been skinned and their bodies filled with straw.
Well,
so it's straw bodies with their skin over it. So there's a straw coming out of their eyes. And they're all being wheelbarrowed to the barn. They're all sat in the barn and they're all floppy, just filled with straw and skin. And it's just horrible. And
I don't...
Yeah.
Are all of them straw people?
They're all straw people. Mark's straw person. Josh is straw person. The Brits are straw people. Christian is not straw person because he is bear man. And a couple of people from the community also have to sacrifice themselves. That's the part of the ritual. They're in there just as regular people,
just sitting in there,
not straw people
or bear people.
Well, they're not there, they're just
Swedish people,
Herger people. And they set the barn alight, and you have this once again horrific scene of all these things burning up, Christian unable to move in his bear costume, burning up, the community members screaming with pain inside the barn, burning up, and then the whole community once again outside screaming as you see Florence Pugh in the big flower dress that can't even move make the smallest crack of a smile as she sees this fire ablaze. So, and that's the end of the film.
She has opted to kill him.
She's opted to kill him, Christian. Yeah. She's opted to kill him, yeah.
Like, that's heavy.
She's given into this community at this point, I think. I believe that she is part of this community at this point, but she's also very drugged up. There's a lot of interesting things about this film with her character. There's obviously, as I said, this is the cathartic release of this relationship in the most extreme way possible, and a way that you would not even predict when you started watching this film. If Ari Aster said this is a breakup movie, this is the ultimate breakup movie. But she's very drugged up. She's also had a massive traumatic event happen to her. And throughout the events of this film, traumatic events she witnesses once again. And it must play a lot on her psyche and this idea that, you know, she's a vulnerable person when she's not recruited, is not the word I would use, but Pella sees a weakness in her that he can exploit and also utilize.
Has she been driven to madness?
Driven to madness is a way of possibly looking at it. But I think she is a strong character. So I don't want to say that she's mad or insane. I want to say that she's suffered a lot.
Yeah.
And she's found some semblance of community here, even though it's fucked up. They are helping her share a grief and enact revenge. It's interesting. It's an interesting film. If you haven't seen it, like I said, please, and you've listened to this and you thought, what the fuck are they talking about?
I mean, if
we've not even gone through everything that happens in this film. I'd say we've covered the main beats.
Yeah.
But it's more, we can talk about it, but there's more that sense of just seeing it and feeling it. And yeah.
That's the real quiz.
That's the real quiz. But yeah, I mean, any final thoughts on this film, Gareth and Danny?
You know, talking through it again, it's just got so many images that stick with you, doesn't it, forever. And you know, when you talk about it, that those images just flash up in your mind. And it is a film that lingers long in the memory.
It's a film that I'll never forget.
Yeah,
especially for the, as I said, the way it made me feel. Certain films obviously have that impact on you where you remember the first time you saw them and you remember how you felt when you saw them. And it's very rare that you get those emotions anymore because we've seen everything. Like the first time I watched Jurassic Park, for example, as a kid, and I felt that unbridled joy and horror at the same time. I've seen dinosaurs. It's amazing.
I was about to say, been a while since we've spoken about Jurassic Park.
Or like Star Wars, the first time I watched Star Wars, or... And you see these things, they make you feel these amazing emotions. Avengers Infinity War did it actually for me with the end of that film, and just something that I hadn't really seen.
Yeah, before. It is hard. It is hard to come across films that give you something
new.
New. And
even if you hate it, it will probably give you a new form of hating something, to be honest with you, because it's so out there.
I can't wait to see what Ari Aster does next.
Well, he's got a 4-hour movie planned that he calls a romantic comedy, but the way he discusses things, he always does this about his films. He says they're like this. Like, he called this a breakup movie.
Well, a lot of people have described this as a comedy.
There are moments structurally in it that speaking. Are comedic.
Like, yeah.
But they are horrible comedy.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I think Danny is a great character.
Great character.
And her journey, sort of, whilst you can't relate to it because we haven't experienced similar things, you understand it, I think, and seeing the film from her perspective, like what happens, kind of makes sense.
It does make sense. She makes the ultimate decision at the end, but you kind of sympathise with it in a way, and that's a testament to the film in a way that you sympathise into.
I mean, look,
setting someone alight in a bear suit.
Christian's a dick, but
does he deserve to be burned
in a bear suit?
He's interesting.
Might be a bit harsh.
Anyway, you have, you know, and I'm sure people who listen to this have seen the film, and they've all got their own interpretations of it. We've given our interpretations of what is a psychedelic trip of madness. But we've just finished our dandelion tea or mushroom tea. We're a bit out of it and we're going to go play squash. So
we actually are.
That sounded like it was psychedelic. We actually are going to go play squash. Yeah. But this has been a lot of fun talking about a film that I feel very passionately about. I know Gareth feels very passionately about.
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen Hereditary, his first film, Ari Aster's first film, please do go watch it. Much scarier than this in terms of jump scares, in terms of
real horror.
But this is horror in a more emotional and sort of
atmospheric
way. And yeah, and that's it. So this was the Commission podcast. Once again, thank you, Chris Meyer, one of our lovely Patreons. And you can be one of our lovely Patreons too. If you go to patreon.com/fancritical, you can see loads of tiers on there. Just any sort of support financially is amazing for us. We really do appreciate every single dollar that people give us to just run this podcast monthly. This isn't our job. This is a sort of hobby of sorts, and we love talking about films and then letting you guys hear it. So if you could support us in any way, shape or form, patreon.com/fancritical. I would also love any reviews on iTunes. That'd be amazing. Please do let us know your honest thoughts. We try to cover films in the most honest way possible that we can. So please do leave a review as well. And that's it for today. We'll be back in the next few weeks. We've got some more Commission podcasts coming up from some of our Patreons. We also have a How the Fuck Have You Not Seen That with The Usual Suspects, mm-hmm. and a Worst of Netflix with Octuplets or some
Sextuplets.
Sounds terrible. So loads going on here. But thank you for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you, Chris, for the Commission. And we will see you guys soon. Stay out of the sunlight, guys.
Welcome to Jurassic Park.
No more Jurassic Park comments in our podcast. Right, okay. Thanks, guys, and see you later.
Bye.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.